with that, I'm going to hand the meeting over to Kim.
Hello, my name is Kim Edward.
Hi, Kim.
There are a lot of you. I actually take quite a large meeting in London, and I've been doing it for only a couple of months, and the people that I ask to do chairs always have this profound emotional reaction when they actually get to the meeting and see all of the people there. And, you know, a lot of people often tell me how angry with me they are. And one person even said, I want to kill you. And I said, that's fine, you completely can, just as long as it's after the meeting. And so all of that is coming back to haunt me at the moment, and I guess this is my karmic punishment. I don't know why I've been thinking about this. I was asked to do a chair several years ago in America in front of, it was sort of a theatre of people there, over 300 people there. And before the meeting, I was sort of, you know, milling about and was behaving very nervously as I have been today. And this old-timer who I had known for meetings came up to me, and he asked me if I was okay, and I said no, and he said, well, you know, he smiled at me, and he touched me on the shoulder, and, you know, in the most reassuring way, he said to me, don't fuck it up. And I've really carried that with me. My instinct is still to tell you all, after I've been clean for as long as I have, my instinct is still to tell you all everything that's wrong with me and, you know, to really focus on my dysfunction, because mostly that's more entertaining than otherwise. But, you know, I have a really hard time talking about the good things in my life and the way that my life has changed. And so, but yet I feel this pressure that I have to sort of give up, you know, positive press to NA and talk about how it saved my life. And, you know, I really struggle to do that. I really struggle to talk about my positive attributes. I've noticed that a lot of people have no trouble whatsoever regularly complimenting themselves in public and not feeling the slightest bit embarrassed about it. But I'm not one of those people. And personally, I don't find many things more boring than people who air their clean linens in public. So I don't entirely want to do that either. But, you know, I don't want to talk about what or how much I used, because that's always been a way for me to feel different. And I know that that's a way that a lot of people feel different. It took me a long time to come to terms with the fact that I was bad enough to qualify for NA and to stop, you know, feeling as though I had to prove it to myself and to other people. You know, I've earned my right to be here because I decided that that's the case and that I've had enough. You know, I don't want to talk about, you know, drug stories and things like that. Personally, I find that having to listen to other people's drug stories is like having to look at somebody else's holiday photos. So, so I'm not going to do a lot of that. And, you know, I will say that I've never smoked crack, I've never been to prison, I've never even been arrested. Yes. So all of you I'm saying that for all of you who that's also true for, so that you can rest assured, that you can be confident in the fact that you belong here. And for all of the people who have done those things, you can feel confident that you're a much worse addict than I am. I will say about my using that I started off using socially. I started off using thinking that I was having a good time and that it would increase my sort of social desirability amongst my peers. and sort of, you know, get me in touch with the people that I wanted to be friends with and do all that sort of thing. And, you know, I wasn't really thinking consciously about, you know, anesthetizing myself and blocking out the profound amount of, you know, emotional and psychic pain. I, you know, that wasn't my conscious thought. I thought that it would just make me a bit, you know, more cool. And then it ended up such that I was using every day. I was dependent on drugs. You know, we say that a lot. You know, we use the word dependent a lot, but we don't really think about what it means. I was dependent on drugs. I couldn't function without using. There was not a single daily activity that I could handle without being high. I needed drugs to function. I couldn't function or do anything, even so much as brush my teeth, without having taken something. I started using at a fairly young age, and, you know, I realised that people don't start using drugs at a fairly young age unless something is not quite right. You know, I thought a lot about my life and been thinking a lot about my life lately. The person who asked me to do this chair asked me 2 months ago, so I've been thinking about it quite a lot. You know, and, you know, it doesn't really benefit me to continue to be upset about my life or about my childhood or, you know, all of that sort of stuff. But, you know, through the process of working the steps and talking about it, I've at least been able to become objective about it and to not, you know, to sort of identify, you know, cause and effect type relationships. I didn't end up in NA because nobody ever had any expectation for me, or because I came from nothing or financial hardship, or, you know, because my life was so incredibly deprived that that was my only option. I ended up in NA because I couldn't meet the level of perfectionism and expectation that was required of me. I come from what's generally considered to be a very nice family, although I've never been under the impression that I sort of fall under the umbrella of that niceness. And when I say nice, I mean deceitful, dishonest, disloyal, disingenuous, narcissists, but they think that they're pretty special. So I was not raised in a loving, nurturing environment. I was not raised in a way that encouraged me to feel my emotions. In fact, it was expected that I should never show my emotions or weakness, perceived weaknesses, or, you know, have a need for nurturing or comfort or love and support or any of that sort of thing. I was expected to be entirely self-sufficient. And on top of that, be an incredibly high achiever and always be the best at everything that I did, and was constantly being compared to everybody else around me. And, you know, all at once I was told that life should be very, very easy for me, and that I should never have any problems and that I shouldn't struggle. And it was very shocking for me to find out that life is not, in fact, easy. Because nobody told me that. Life is, in fact, very difficult. So, I came from a place where I was expected to perform always with a very high degree of accomplishment, if not perfectionism. I was always expected to do everything the best. You know, I was always expected to be the top of my class, to just on and on and on. And on top of that, my parents also wanted me to be an Olympian. And so most of my childhood was spent, if not, you know, in studying, revising, you know, doing that sort of thing, I spent up to 5 to 6 days a week sort of training and doing sport and all that kind of stuff as well. I know I don't look like it, but I'm actually very sporty. And I basically didn't have a childhood. I was basically expected to... I was treated like an adult from a very young age, and I was expected to respond and act and, you know, cope with my emotions and do all of that as an adult would, and also consistently perform well in school and at sport. And I grew very tired of all of that, and I grew very tired of always being severely punished, you know, with shame and humiliation every time that I was not able to perform in whatever capacity that was expected of me. And, you know, my parents... My father's a tyrant and just completely believes in absolute authority and, you know, cannot stand to be questioned. And my mother needs a lot of emotional support, to put it bluntly. So, you know, my life was spent with alternating extremes with the feelings that I had with my parents of please pay attention to me and please leave me alone. And there was not really anything in between. I didn't spend a lot of time with my parents growing up, if I'm being perfectly honest. I don't really have a strong sense of connection with my family, and I felt a profound sense of rejection from a very, very young age for not being able to be the person that they thought that I ought to be. And I still don't entirely feel as though I'm that person, but I've actually realised that I don't need to continually seek their approval. And that's been a very sort of difficult process. So, anyhow, all of that being said, when I look at my life and I look at the details of my life, I can't see that there is any possible option for me to have made it through life without being an addict. I found that taking drugs was the only relief from all of that and from all of the pressure, all of the perfectionism, all of the shame, all of the humiliation, all of that. It was a profound relief to just not care and to have something to escape to. It just made sense. From actually, you know, I remember the first time I really started using it, and I don't even know if I had sort of like first made me intoxicated, but my mother used to give me cough elixir if I was congested, a sort of decongestant cough elixir. And I liked taking, and I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, I liked taking it so much. I would sort of go off and privately cry or make myself cry so that I'd become decongested so that I can go to my mother and say, oh, I'm decongested, I need some cough elixir, which she'd readily give to me. And I very quickly learned that I can circumvent this process entirely by just climbing up and getting it myself when nobody's looking. So, you know, I just sort of sit in front of the medicine cabinet drinking cough elixir. It made sense. There's a certain element that's always been with me that, you know, I need to feel complete, and the only way that I feel complete is by taking something. I'm the type of person who, it's not really the case anymore, but I'm the type of person to take a paracetamol in case I get a headache. And I, quite frankly, took drugs the same way. You know, I'm just going to, you know, have a hit of dope in case I get shot in the head or catch myself on fire or whatever the case may be. So, you know, it's in my nature to just want to take something to make myself feel better. I don't really have a lot to say about my using. It was very uneventful. It started off as, you know, a big party, and it ended up sort of in my bedroom all alone, you know, just in complete destitute despair. The last few years of my using, nothing really happened. All I used in isolation, I was entirely miserable. This thing that I started doing in my life that I thought that was the solution, I thought was the relief that I felt, ended up just being utterly miserable and terrible. The last few years, my using all I did was just sort of sit in my bedroom and get high. And this was punctuated by sort of trips to hospital or suicide attempts or even being sectioned every now and then. And that's just kind of the way that it was. I don't talk about that a lot, but that's a very, very large part of my history. I was a very unhappy person for most of my life. I got clean because actually it becomes very tedious to be sectioned repeatedly. And I was able to draw a correlation between the fact that using only made me unhappy in the end. It became a lot of work. I started off feeling addicted to the good feeling that drugs gave me. And then quickly everything got very bad and I sort of normalized that. And all of a sudden, you know, feeling miserable, feeling suicidal, feeling completely empty and worthless and, you know, unproductive and all of that, that became normal to me. I came from a place of extreme high achievement and ended up, you know, in a room with a pile of gear when I was lucky. So I got clean. Actually, my first clean date was 12 years ago last week, my first clean date. And I got clean and I went to a lot of meetings and I went to meetings and I saw people and it was the only thing that I had going on in my life at the time. I wasn't working, I wasn't doing anything. I just, you know, and I saw people who were happy and I saw people laughing and joking and sort of having a nice time and apparently, you know, in theory, they weren't using, and that was a mystery to me. That was, you know, it gave me sort of hope. And, you know, I went to a meeting every day. Unfortunately, I didn't stay clean because I didn't understand the concept of total abstinence. I thought that if I have a prescription for something or if I drink every now and again, that doesn't really count. And I found out eventually that I was mistaken about that. You know, the last day that I used, it wasn't with my drug of choice. It wasn't, you know, I had a drink, and I thought that I could have a drink, and I thought that I didn't have a problem with alcohol, and that I wasn't an alcoholic, and that, you know, that's just what people do. That's what people do. They go to parties and they have drinks. And unfortunately, that drink lasted several days. And I don't remember very much of those several days. And that was the last time that I used, and the thing that I needed to prove to myself, or the thing that I needed to learn, to know that I actually don't know everything, and I don't know what's best for me, and I actually don't have very good judgment, and I, you know, should come to meetings and actually listen to what other people say and do what other people do and get a sponsor and work the steps and actually participate and not sort of go to meetings passively and then come home and think that I know what's best for me. So it was at that point that I was able to completely and totally surrender. And, you know, I have to say that one of the reasons why I'm still clean is because I did what most other people did who are still clean, and that is I did full immersion into NA. I did a meeting every day for the first 6 months, really. I got a sponsor, I worked the steps, I did service, and I tried my best to learn how to say the phrase, "I don't know." It took me about 7 years to a decade to really master it, but I have. So, and actually, I have to say, it's such a relief to not know everything. It's a lot of pressure to have to know everything. I was just going to say not a lot has happened. More things have actually happened since I've been clean than when I used. My using wasn't eventful. I didn't go any place. I didn't do anything. I didn't meet very interesting people. Much more has happened since I've gotten clean. I've done degrees, plural. I've done more than one degree. Although, I chose a field that I don't actually particularly like, and which has created some problems for me. I have 4 degrees in chemistry, and I don't even fucking like it. And that just comes to show how willing I am to punish myself in the guise of, doing something positive. But the point is that, I went from a place where I thought that I could do nothing, that I can accomplish nothing, that my life would never amount to anything, that I would die before, before I was 30. And I've gone in, I turned that around, and I sort of really started showing up for my life and doing loads of things and participating. It occurred to me right at around 2 or 3 years clean that if I wanted my life to change, I was going to have to be the one to change it, and that nobody would do that for me. I was, having the parents that I had and being sort of at once overindulged and completely neglected, and, having parents that were completely over-involved and under-involved all at once. It was an empowering thing to know that actually I can sort of kind of do or affect the outcome of my life. Not entirely, I can't plan the outcome, but I can actually participate in my own life, and I can do things that I don't need other people to do them for me, and that actually I'm quite capable and competent and I can do things. And I've had a number of jobs in a number of countries doing things that sound actually a lot more boring than they actually are. But I worked as a chemist for most of the time that I've been clean, which sounds impressive. Well, not a pharmacy chemist, of bubbling beakers, explosions kind of chemist. Well, hopefully not explosions. But that's sort of what I did. And I assure you, it is a lot more boring than it sounds. But I was able to do it, and I did it. And I've been to universities all over the world doing that. It's what brought me back to this country, in fact. And, the thing that I've learned is that I'm not disabled because I'm an addict. It's not a handicap. I'm able to sort of participate in life and be a productive member of society and contribute and do all of that sort of stuff. And I didn't know that for most of my life. And it was a really reassuring thing to know that I can be in a group of people in a room, and whilst I might spend a tremendous amount of time thinking that they're going to discover that I'm a fraud, I actually am capable of doing a task just as well as they are. And I don't need to tell everybody that I'm an addict and have them make special allowances for me or exceptions for me. I can just kind of show up and do it. And that was really good to know. I've only been talking for 22 minutes. I have to say that doing service has helped me stay clean. Being a sponsor has helped me stay clean. Sponsorship is just such a... I wasn't taught unconditional love as a child. It's something that I've had to learn as an adult, and the way that I've learned that is through sponsorship. And I don't necessarily mean in having a sponsor, but I mean in being a sponsor. I've learned how to love another human being, which I never really thought that I had the capacity to do, but I've learned to love another human being through sponsorship. And I've had a number of sponsees, and a lot of them, I'm fairly young and I got clean at an early age, and so a lot of the people who have asked me to sponsor them have been younger than me and they know everything and, you know, that's fine. I knew everything once as well. But, you know, not a lot of them have stuck around because getting clean at a young age has, you know, it has a lot of the problems of thinking, well, I haven't done enough, I haven't suffered enough, I haven't, you know, I haven't lost my house or wife or dog or whatever the case may be. And so a lot of people just don't stay clean. And I did get clean at a young age, and I never had those things, and I was never going to have those things at the rate that I was going. And now, as a result of being clean, there is a chance that they might happen. So, you know, I understand that a whole feeling of never having enough, it never feels like enough. No matter how much you've used, it never feels like enough. And the only consolation that I have, and the only thing that keeps me here, is that I don't want to do any more of what I did before. I was really attached to my suffering for a long time, even in recovery, but I don't want to go back to the life that I used to have. So maybe things haven't, you know, things haven't happened to me that are as bad as other people, or as other people have experienced. And I'd like to keep it that way. So I don't know, I was talking about sponsorship. I've lost my thread. My sponsor has taught me so much. It's one thing to learn the steps and to do them yourself, and it's another thing entirely to teach them to another person, or not to teach them, to guide someone else through the steps. And I remember when I only have one sponsor at the moment, and I remember when she asked me to sponsor her. And it was when I was still working in sort of academic chemistry, and she asked me to sponsor her, and she only had 60 days clean, and I looked at her, and I knew that this was going to happen. She asked me to have coffee with her, and I went to coffee with her, and I had a premonition that this might happen, and I had a list of people prepared to tell her to go to for sponsorship. She asked me, it was inevitable, she asked me to sponsor her, and I had this whole sort of monologue prepared about how, you know, my life is very busy, I'm very busy, it wouldn't be fair to you, I wouldn't have enough time for you. It's just, you know, I'm not able to give that much, you know. But she sort of looked at me with, you know, her huge doughy eyes, and I found myself doing a very clever task of saying, well, let's try it on a trial basis. And so I started sponsoring her, and I can't tell you the benefit that it has had in my life. It gives me an opportunity to stop thinking about myself, which is fantastic. It doesn't happen a lot. I remember I was writing, was doing a doctorate when I started sponsoring her, and she has this innate sort of sense of when to call me, and she always calls me when I'm not doing particularly well. And I remember I was writing my thesis, this sort of 80,000 word blah blah about, you know, some protein that nobody cares about. I was working from home, and I was working at home because I couldn't cope with going into work and doing it. I was working from home, and I was sort of in bed with the covers up over my head because I was so stressed out. Doing this sort of thing was very stressful. I was in bed and, with, you know, under the covers, you know, with the duvet pulled up over my head so that I could stop looking at the walls that were bleeding and just really wasn't having a good time. And she called me. She called me right at that moment, and I answered the phone. I'm like, oh, thank God, it's you. And she said, you know, is everything all right? Are you okay? I said, yes, of course. How can I help? Okay. And I don't know if I said anything that was helpful to her at all in that conversation. But when I ended that, or when the phone call ended, I felt a lot better. And so, just to have an opportunity to stop, you know, in sort of obsessive rumination of, you know, on and on and on, you know, doing service has really helped with that. I do other service. I take a meeting and I sort of involve in one of the areas. And I find that all of that gives me a tremendous opportunity to learn how to practice patience and tolerance. And if you need to learn patience and tolerance, get involved in either an area or a regional subcommittee. And behold the failure of democracy. So, but it's good. It's good. No, I mean, I sort of struggle. I was feeling very upset about having to talk about for, you know, 30 to 40 minutes about myself, and I don't do a lot of sharing. I don't share from the floor at meetings. I'm not one of those people who always shares back at every meeting that they go to. It's really easy for me to sort of seek safety in silence and to not share. And I have to be perfectly honest with you, the feeling that I get from leaving a meeting when I don't share has become so powerful that it reinforces this feeling of silence. And it becomes, you know, it just becomes a self-perpetuating thing. And so it's really, as much as I don't like doing this at the moment, well, it's not that bad. I really shouldn't be wearing my glasses so I can't see all of you. As much as uncomfortable as it is, this is actually really good for me to have an opportunity to just sort of share, really. Although I will say that probably, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I did not struggle with talking about myself for 30 to 40 minutes as much as I do now. So perhaps that is a sign of growth. You know, I have 5 minutes. You know, my life has changed so dramatically since I've gotten clean. I don't really think about that. It's been a gradual change. It's not something like that's been as though I woke up one night, or I woke up after sleep one night and I noticed that all of a sudden my life was different. It hasn't been like that. It's been a gradual change. The way that I conduct myself is different. The way that I interact with other people is different. You know, I had to learn social graces in recovery. I didn't really have those before. I had to learn how to interact with people and be polite and say please and thank you and all of that sort of stuff. I had to learn how to be a lady and dress appropriately. And, you know, that's actually a really important thing. I've learned how to be a lady. I've learned not to dress in a way that doesn't leave much to the imagination, because it doesn't usually attract people that are very imaginative. So I've had to work all of that out. You know, I don't know what to say after that. But, you know, it's NA in general, you know, I'm a very sensitive person who reads between the lines and thinks that things mean things that they don't actually mean, and spent a lot of time thinking of that, and did I say that, and that did that person think that I meant this, I didn't mean that, and, you know, all of that sort of cycling and spinning and all of that stuff that I have spent so much of my life doing has sort of gradually slowed down and, you know, has stopped for intervals lasting up to 20 minutes. No, life has gotten considerably better. Sometimes life is so good that I think that the only reason I really come to meetings is just for tea and, you know, hugs and things like that. And I don't really know, you know, I don't... It doesn't occur to me. Using doesn't occur to me. For the first time in a very, very long time, using doesn't occur to me. If something really bad happens, my knee-jerk reaction is not, oh, how can I go out and destroy myself and not feel this? You know, it's my response to life and the things that happen in it has become very different. And I'm able to conduct myself fairly normally, except for when I'm nervous. I have trouble acting normal when I'm nervous. But, you know, I've been able to sort of become a productive member of society and do things that I thought that I'd never do and survive feelings that I never thought that I would survive and feel a profound sense of embarrassment and not have to go use. And, you know, a lot of things have happened. You know, I thought for the longest time that the hallmark of somebody who was having a successful recovery was somebody who didn't feel any feelings and was completely impervious to the outside world and didn't have any kind of reaction whatsoever, internal or external. I thought that feelings and feeling any sense of defeat or anything was a sign that I was doing something wrong. And, you know, the fact is that it's not. The thing that I've learned about being clean is that I'm human. And that's all that there is to it. I'm human. I feel joy. I feel sadness. I feel embarrassment a lot. But I'm human. You know, I don't expect that I shouldn't ever have feelings. And most of my recovery has taught me how to tolerate those feelings. So I'm sort of counting the seconds. But, you know, recovery has taught me that I'm actually not alone. I've spent so much of my life feeling as though I don't fit in and that I'm a complete misfit and an outcast and that I don't belong anywhere. And recovery has really, really helped me to challenge those feelings and to know that even if I'm not just like everybody sitting next to me in the meeting, chances are there are a greater deal of similarities, much more so than exists, you know, out in the general populace. At least we have the language to talk about it and discuss it with one another and have a sense of safety and security. So I'm not going to hold the meeting hostage, and my time is up. And so, you know, even if something bad happens, I know that I can keep coming back. Even if something good happens, I know that I can keep coming back. And the only thing that has been consistent is just going to loads of meetings and sharing and being honest. And as a result, I've managed to be clean for many, many years. Well, that's relative. But, you know, and my life is different and my life is better. And I feel a sense of happiness that I haven't felt consistently, you know, throughout much of my life. And I owe that all to just coming here and surrendering and getting clean. So, thanks.